and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name's Adam Cook. Happy New Year. If we're still doing that at this point, I don't know. I am joined, as ever, by Chris White.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
I like that rebuttal.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was just like off the cuff, mate. I didn't even plan that, so there you go.
You could tell. Now, in a move that's not been designed to be confusing, there is another Adam with us on the podcast regularly this year. His name's Adam Carroll. Hello, Adam, all right?
Hello, fellas, how are you?
Good, mate, good.
Good, but this is going to be a pure test for me because I don't like saying my name out loud and my name is also your name. Do you have that as well?
I'm exactly the same, and that's something that I think we should sort out right now, but we we maybe should have done it before we started recording. I don't know, but yeah, there's two Adams. I don't like saying my own name out loud, so we'll have to fix this somehow.
Is that just an Adam thing? Like, Chris, when you say your name out loud, does it sound strange?
No.
Oh, weird. Okay, I was really thinking you might say yes. Then no. That's
What am I going to do when I talk to either of you? Because if I say Adam,
yep,
maybe you aren't.
You can't. You can't even say Adam C.
Cookster, no, because that's the Cookster.
Please don't say that. Please do not say Cookster.
Like, Cookster,
call me anything.
Cookster and Adam C. sound like two really dodgy DJs.
It sounds a bit like, and this is aging myself, like PJ and Duncan. Like, it sounds like two lads who started out in a TV show. No, just please don't call me Cookster. I don't actually. You can call me anything but that. Okay. Well,
we could just go with the simple Adam 1 and Adam 2. We could just do that if it gets a bit confusing, if we don't know who is actually supposed to talk.
I think it's better if Chris just says Adam. And
all right. He's got,
all right. And I think it would make for, again, this is probably something we should have talked about before, but I think it makes for a more entertaining podcast.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, we start off the year with just a full ton of confusion, so let's go with that.
that's the God is a Geek way, always has been. Listen, there has been a lot of games. We're going to do things a little bit different on the podcast this year, but we're also more to people who've listened for a very long time. It's kind of thrown back to that. We're going to talk about games we've been playing, we're talking about news, we might throw in a bit of other stuff. It's just going to be casual conversation, as you want to like. So we're going to start this year though by, you know, standard talking about what we've been playing, because hey, listen, we had our break over 2017. Well, say we had a break. There was a lot of podcasts went up. What have you? I mean, it would be rude not to ask Adam, the new boy, what he's been playing. So, with that in mind, I will ask Chris. No, of course I will. I will ask Adam, what have you been playing? Well, generally, it doesn't have to be over the Christmas break. You know, what's been your poison recently?
Okay. So it's not really surprising. It has been discussed many times already on this podcast. But I have been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Now, It is pretty much the exact same story that you have, Adam, regarding why you only played it recently, and that is because of being burnt out from Breath of the Wild. And I think Horizon was a week before Breath of the Wild, and I remember kind of, oh no, was it after?
No, it was before, but it was like a week. It was like a week, because I remember, I don't know, it might have even been you, I remember talking to someone and saying like, I'm not sure you should even start it, because you know what I mean?
Yeah, and see, I had to. I was so excited for Horizon. I thought, the first time I saw it, I was just like, yeah, I'm sold. This is up my street, everything. But the excitement when not only Zelda, but when the Switch came around, I was like, okay, this is really overwhelming. I'm going to be 100% distracted. That's what happened. I played Zelda, I put in over 100 hours, went back to Horizon, and I just could not feel it. I just didn't know what it was. I was actually overwhelmed. I thought the inventory management was really daunting, even though it's like so basic. I just think Breath of the Wild was just so much more like simple, like in its ways, you know. It was kind of, there you go. You don't have this massive HUD thing going on. Like, even the HUD screen in Horizon at the time was throwing me off. Like, I felt like everything was like coming in on Aloy, and it was really suffocating the play. So never went near it. And then I just saw constant people like just banging on about how good it was and how amazing this IP is and Guerrilla and where they are now and what they're going to do down the line. And I said to myself, I'll have to play it before this year was out. And I did put my time into it in October, and my God, did that game click with me then. It you've said it all before, but like, I know the story is really good, but it's, to me, it's Aloy. I think Aloy is just a fantastic character. I love everything about her. And then it just did the whole, I remember playing even Dying Light, to sidetrack a second, and just Dying Light offering this whole addictive streak where you jump in, instantly can just start doing stuff by the looting and all that kind of jazz. And I got into that with Horizon. I just felt like killing every, if I see a load of enemies, I didn't feel like, oh no, there's, I just want to move on. I want to progress in the game. I wanted to do it. I felt, what way will I do this? Will I do it in a stealth manner? Or will I just go balls out crazy and just shoot arrows everywhere? And that to me was so enjoyable for a game of like, because it's a long game. Like, Jesus Christ.
Surprisingly. Have you finished it? Have you?
Like, I am 91%. I think I'll finish it today as we record this.
It is, I mean, I think I hit 45 hours by the end. I mean, I did platinum it, but
that's like, what I'm kind of doing.
A way longer game than you think it is.
Mm. Yeah. Like, I've done all the collectibles. I've all the Hunter trials done and everything. Like, I kind of just, like, it got a bit ridiculous to a stage where it tells you the required level for your next quest or whatever. And, my required level was 12 and I was actually level 41.
Yeah, by the end of that game, because I'd done so much.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to, not because I felt I had to, but because I didn't find any challenge. But then I didn't mind. Mm. I wasn't like, oh, I wish this was challenging. It was fine.
Yeah, like, and that's not really a gripe towards the game. I just think, if anything, it's a pro because it just goes to show you how much fun the game actually is outside of its main storyline. And I am just so excited to see where they go. Because if I'm honest, I was never a Killzone fan at all. Like, I appreciated what they did, but I thought Killzone was just hard as nails. And I wasn't really invested in the story, but I actually ended up, because of Horizon, I ended up picking up, like, Shadowfall. Do you know that literally first?
Wow.
Yeah, I picked it up.
Really?
That's because, no, I got it for €3.
Yeah, no, it will be very
€3. Yeah, no, and I was in my, I know that it's not going to be the greatest thing ever, but for €3, I can't go wrong with it. And I kind of want to see what they did, because for some unknown reason, I just stayed away from it. I was just like, I'm not into Killzone. And it came out within the first launch.
Have you not played it at all yet? You haven't started it yet?
No, not at all.
I'd just be intrigued. You know, perhaps next week would be ideal if you get a chance. Just how it looks now, because at the time, it was a PS4 launch game, and it was one of those games when I reviewed the PS4 launch lineup that was like, ooh, okay. I wasn't sure about needing a new gen, really, but no, I get it. And I'd be interested to see, because Horizon is probably one of the best-looking games of this gen so far.
Yeah. It does have its moments, though, where, like, it's unreal how it looks, but it does have its fair share of, like, dodgy moments in the game. Like, I think, right, when you go from Breath of the Wild even, and you know, in Breath of the Wild, you can climb everything and anything. Like, Link just sticks to it. And
okay, I know what you're going to say. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, it's amazing. And when you go to Horizon, it actually does that whole, in some
Skyrim
moment,
thing.
Skyrim, exactly.
Yeah.
It does that
thing where you can I get up this?
Can I get
I
up
think
this?
I can get up this if I angle it right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate that, by the way. I hate that shit.
I dislike it. I don't mind it in Skyrim because that's just part of the fun of that game, but
the jank.
Yeah, in Horizon, it's kind of a bit. It's a small gripe that kind of kills the vibe and the visual aspect of it all. Especially when you have like when you go up a tall neck and then you jump off it. Like I could do that for the entire game. Like that little.
They made towers good again.
They have. Yeah, it's really good. Not even enough of them, in fact, which is so unusual because.
Yep.
I think there's only like 5 in the entire game, and you're kind of like, I could have done at least, like, if you play Far Cry, Assassin's Creed, whatever, it's nearly 20 towers you have to go and find, and sometimes it's very frustrating.
I mean, Chris can tell us, but I'm pretty sure they added one more for the DLC, didn't they? The Frozen Wilds.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I remember seeing one of them, because I've platinumed bar that I keep looking at I've got the Frozen Wilds and I've bought it and I've got it and I'm like, I should play other games, but I really want to go back and do that as well.
I would probably just hang fire because when I played Horizon originally, it was back in like February, March time, and then I didn't play it for a long time. So the Frozen Wilds felt new, but it still kind of felt the same. So playing it now would just be like going to do a side quest, I think. I mean, there's some...
I kind of want more.
There's a lot to it, and it's a good... Right, another 8-10 hours worth, I think, roughly. And then you've got all the
It seemed hard.
New...
Like, I did go into the camp to just kind of unlock, like, if I want to fast travel back and get on with it. Because at the point I played it, I wasn't sure if it was... I wasn't sure how the game was going to end. Like, if it... Mm. I mean, I presumed it's an open world game. I presume you can go back and carry on. But I wasn't sure. So I thought, I'll go there just in case I want to fast travel and just get that stuff done. And, like, there's... The enemies seem to be like all elemental, but in a different way.
Yeah,
and they seemed actually challenging.
There's one of the animals, dinosaurs, robot, beast things, whatever they are. There's this. One of the first massive ones you kind of face is based on like a polar bear, so it's just absolutely insane that fight you have with it. And just from that, you know that it's going to be tough because it's takes a lot to take it down. But the Frozen Wilds is, I mean, we've mentioned it before about it being kind of like, it's not end game content. It's very much designed to be played
That's what's putting me
side
off as
by
well.
Side because there's characters in it that have a definite ending or a twist to them that you'd find weird playing after you've finished Horizon. So, but it's still excellent DLC. It's just very much more of the same.
Yeah,
with some tougher bosses, but yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that. But from there's a couple of people I know who have played it and they have said like it's really hard. Like, and that to me is a bit strange because
I'm not sure if I want that.
I don't know if I want that. And if it is the case, why wasn't it this way in the actual game? Like, because Horizon is hard at the beginning, but then once you meet every single enemy and you understand how to kill them, it's fine. Nothing's really daunting anymore. Like,
it'd be a challenge for you, but I don't think it's... I mean, with you being, like you're saying, like level 40-odd, it's designed for about 30 to 35.
Yeah, so I remember them saying
it's
that.
It's tougher,
yeah.
It's tougher, but it's not, like, solid. It's a challenge. I think it'd be good to play with you finding it a lot kind of... easier as you reach the end.
Yeah,
because it's definitely a challenge.
Because there's a weapon you can get. It's not spoiler, but there's a weapon you can get, and there's a side quest that lets you get a special like suit of armor as such in one of the what are they called? Those underground thing. Bunker. Is it bunker?
Cauldrons.
Yeah, there's one that you actually come across it really early in the game, but you can't unlock it until you find, I think, 3 batteries or fuses or something.
I think it's power. And is it the power cells?
Yes, it might be power cells. Yeah, and once you get those and get this suit and you get the upgraded version of a weapon, you have all the game. I'm trying not to spoil a 8-month-old game.
Yeah.
But it kind of trivializes the combat a little bit because there are certain enemies because you've got this. This suit of armor basically gives you an overshield that recharges after a few seconds.
Yeah.
So you can kind of just wade in with melee attacks, which is something you cannot do the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And so that kind of meant that by the end of the game, I was really enjoying the larger fights because whereas originally I was like, oh, this is a pain in the ass. I've got to shoot its gun off so I can pick up its gun and use it against it. What I was finding is they were actually becoming a challenge and I thought it was quite clever that it might have been accidental the way I played it. It might have been accidental the way I did the quests, but I found that the combat stayed fun. And
it did.
Yeah, you know,
the combat did stay fun. But I just want to like put a question out there, right? Because Chris, like, you're a massive fan, obviously, of Shadow of War. You gave it like your game of the year.
Yeah,
like the open world aspect. Okay, it's everything. Like every developer is coming out with some game like this, and it's all about how big the world is, right?
Yep.
When it comes down to the gameplay, where do ye stand on, let's say, all the options that they give you to use in the gameplay? So like in Horizon, I felt after I put 20 hours in, I kind of knew what I just needed all the time. I didn't need the trap wires. I did, even though they really are the rope casters and trip casters and stuff. They're really cool, but they're just, they kind of slow down everything after a while. You're kind of just, I feel like when I go in with like a fire arrow or a precision arrow, I'm like, that's all I really need. I get by and I get through it quickly. Like,
exactly,
does that happen in like, Like, it did the same when I played Dying Light. Like, you could create all these weapons, but I was like, oh, I don't need them because I'm doing totally fine with this one weapon. Like, I feel that that still needs to be worked on.
You know that bow you get, Chris? Sure you got it as well. And there's a bow you get that does, I think, ice, electric, and I think corruption damage. There's that bow.
Yeah.
I did not use that.
I didn't
at all. Apart from when you have to for the trials to get the platinum. I'm hoping Chris is going to say that will come into play more because the elemental style of the Frozen Wilds.
Well, to be fair, I completely agree with Adam.
Yeah.
About the fact that you don't. I mean, I didn't use the trip caster at all. I use it once in the training mission.
Yeah.
And never used it again for the hunting grounds.
I used it for, and that was it.
And pinning down some of the robots, I used a bit, but
I used that loads.
A lot for when there's like one particular boss, the behemoth that you have to fight in like Colosseum, that fight.
Did you not use it for the flying creatures then? Because that was where I used it the most, because you can tie them down so they can't... Because I found them hard to hit, so if you hit them with the...
I kind of enjoyed just firing fire arrows at them and then shooting them down, and then when they fall, just batter them.
Yeah,
so I tied them to the ground.
Yeah.
And then I could get under them and shoot their weak points.
Yeah. I think the progression system in Shadow of War for me was like perfect because it gave you a little bit of something every time you leveled up, and it really felt like you used everything you were given, and it felt really kind of complete. Whereas Horizon, there's a lot you can upgrade, but very little of it I use.
But you get that shotgun style weapon, don't you, as well? Really, really late on, I thought.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. But yes, it's phenomenal. It's just
it's still
fun just to kind of use the bare minimum. And again, what you were saying, Adam, about the different arrows, it's like I only use the fire and the precision off the armor.
it's just something as well though that like made me truly appreciate Breath of the Wild for being my number one game, because in that you kind of do use everything out of curiosity to see how this will turn out for you. Like, it's only a small gripe within the game, but I hope, like, if we do get a second Horizon, that, like...
Oh, trust me, there is definitely going to be a second one. Okay, I don't want to spoil. Because I was actually in a similar situation where I hadn't completed, and I was listening to people on other podcasts going, like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to the second one. And I was like, oh, well, they obviously must be sure of that. But once you see... So even right up to the end of the game, the credits are rolling, you're like, oh, I actually personally felt like I'm not... I don't need a sequel. And then there's an after credits scene and you're like, damn it. You are perhaps committing to a sequel I wasn't sure I even wanted. But there definitely will be another game. Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know what shape it will take. And it's probably at least a year away from even being announced. So
either way, I'm excited. I think it's just an absolutely fantastic game.
Fair play. I mean, should we make a promise we won't talk about Horizon
anymore? Yeah, I know.
Even the person who does like our podcast artwork is like, Horizon again? I was like, yeah, it's a real... I will say, right, having listened to other Game of the Year stuff, because, you know, I like to keep up, and I always, you know, at the end of the day, I have friends and people I like who do podcasts about Game of the Year stuff. And one thing I was surprised about is, given how many high scores... Because at the time, I was in the camp, I think I said it on the podcast, of like, how is this getting eights and nines? And now I'm like, I'd have given it a nine at least.
Yeah.
But I don't feel it got much due in the Game of the Year stuff. Ours it did, but I don't feel like a lot of people seem to...
It's strange.
It did get Zelda'd. Like, it's really weird because part of me thinks Sony like did not predict how big the Switch was going to be. But at the same time, I think they must have. That's why they were like, we have to put this out before Zelda. Because there's an interesting... You know, friend of the site, been on the podcast, Danny O'Dwyer, in his documentary, there is a moment where they talk about Enslaved.
Yeah.
You should go and watch it, by the way. Go watch Danny's documentary on Horizon Zero Dawn because it's fantastic. I haven't finished watching it all, but what I've seen of it's great. Adam, I know you've seen it.
And it's great.
But there's a moment where they talk about they're trying to come up with something new and they have like a pitch meeting and they get this game and they're excited about this game. And then I think they said like Bandai Namco announced Enslaved, which was Ninja Theory, and like everyone loves Ninja Theory. Well, I love Ninja Theory. And they were like, shit, this game looks similar. And when you actually think about it, there are similarities, but like it was almost like a flip of the coin that Horizon got made. And like that game, I'll be honest, by the time I was writing down my personal list available on godisgeek.com, as are all of our lists. I was genuinely writing them down, and I wrote them out, and I put them, and I had them in order. And I was like, I need to. I'm not sure if this is number three or number two. Like,
yeah, that man. When I had, because it was Zelda Odyssey and Horizon for me, were my three favorites, and because Horizon came so late into my life, that kind of, for some reason, I felt that warranted being up higher or something. I don't know. Does that mean, like, this should be number two?
I think it's just because, like you say, it's the proximity.
Yeah.
And when I really sat there, like, no, Zelda is just... I mean, everyone knows by now. Everyone knows by now about Zelda. Well, we won't promise we won't talk about Horizon yet.
No.
There's a chance I might start playing the DLC this coming week.
Yeah.
And Adam's going to perhaps finish it, and that might...
Yeah.
But there won't be many more.
It'll be brief. It'll be brief.
Yeah, yeah. What else have you been playing then, mate?
I won't stay too long on these ones, but obviously I champion the Switch so much. I think it's like the best thing to happen in 2017 for me in gaming. I just love it. I have it all the time with me. I ended up getting Skyrim. Look, let's be honest. Everyone knows what Skyrim is, okay? When it got announced for Switch, I even went, I don't think I could be bothered with this now. Day one, I bought it. I was like, fuck it, give me Switch. Or give me Skyrim. I was like, I need that again. I'm going to be honest and say that it is the best way to play it.
You say that, and I've got the VR version waiting here to be played.
See,
I should do something with that. I've got to do a video. I've got to do something with that game.
Yeah.
Like
the VR, don't get me wrong. I've played Skyrim on every platform that it's been released on.
You are a fan then?
Yes.
Okay.
And the VR one is the first one that's come out, and I've just been like, I don't think I could stomach this size of a game in VR. Like, that game in VR, that game seems like it's going to take you the entire year.
The problem is, like, I was thinking of just doing a let's play of it for the site, and then I thought about the intro of that game. It's like, I'd have to probably play 2 hours to get to anything that's even interesting to show.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spend 2 hours in VR. And I love VR. Anyone who listens to this podcast or follows God as a Geek knows I am the champion of VR. Mm-hmm. But I don't... I would rather play Rez or... super hot again. Like, less than the secret thing is I'm not actually the biggest Skyrim fan. I liked it, but I felt that at that time I kind of overdosed on Bethesda because their games feel familiar. And
I never clicked with Fallout.
Right. Like, that's the thing. I loved Fallout and like thrashed 3 and New Vegas, and then by the time Skyrim hit, I was like, these games are too similar.
Yeah, yeah. But look, what I will say about it being on the Switch is that having it on the go, like majority of games, is fantastic. Like, I always say that I will not finish Persona 5 until Persona 5 is on handheld. Because that is the only way.
Really?
It's the only way. Games like that are too long. Like, we don't have the time to sit down and play 100 hours when there's so many games coming out at such a pace. And if you do this for a living, or whatever, like, you need to keep updated with stuff. You can't just be saying, all I've done this year is play Skyrim.
It's different if I say to you, here's Persona 5, review that. It's different because there's an obligation.
But
if just, I bought Persona 5 because I love Persona, and then you start playing, and then the report's coming, 10 out of 10 game, 100 hours. Oh, wow. 100, you say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
That's hard.
But to...
I mean, I'm surprised I hit 45 hours on Horizon. Because
me too.
It was we're talking about Horizon again.
Yeah.
But that to me is not that I'm the bastion of he's the watermark here. Like, but for me, I don't play much that I don't have to play. If you see what I mean, like I'm playing games for God is a Geek for a freelance review. I tend to be doing that. So the fact I then went, I've got some time, I'm going to try and pick up Horizon and hit another 40 hours of it from what the 8 I'd already played was like, that's a high watermark. That is.
Yeah,
because that's a lot of time.
Mm.
It is. It's. I don't know. I couldn't do it. Like I got.
Nope.
I got Persona 4 on the Vita, and I finished it, and I was like, "That's the way it should be." I wouldn't have finished this if it was on my console. But with Skyrim, you see, if this is your first time playing it, I do think the Switch is the way to go. I think the port is absolutely perfect. Like, not that it's like the most difficult thing to port, but it runs really, really well. If you understand what I mean by saying that, like having a game this size on the Switch.
Yeah.
It runs really well. It still has all the horrendous bugs and jankiness, but to me, that's the charm of Skyrim. That is just what it's become.
Amiibos. You can put an amiibo on it.
And... True. You can be Link. You can be Link. But that's what I will say it's that it's really good for on the Switch is that I paid far more attention to reading all the books and all the text stuff on it. Like, because there's so many books that you pick up. Like, you just go into a room and just, it's funny in its own way. You just keep pressing A and he's just picking everything up. And you've all these books. I find having those kind of books to tell you the lore of Skyrim on the Switch is superb. I think it really puts a load more depth into the story, and it's just, you can take it in your own time, especially if you've been through the game already. I don't know, man. I just think it was a great thing to have over Christmas. Really, like when it was, like when you're sitting around with the family and stuff, you don't want to be down in the room. Yeah, just like, you know, fuck off. I'm playing the PlayStation on Christmas Day. Like, having the Switch for these kind of things was just sublime, which is what led me into also the other game I was playing, which is Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Oh, it's a great game, that is.
It's a great game. It's a great, great game. Didn't think, like, there's a place now at the moment where these kind of games don't get the attention that they once did, right?
Yep.
It just doesn't exist. Like, I'm one of those kids that when I had a Game Boy, I had Tetris, I had Mario, and I was really into Mario, obviously. Like, it was Mario's my thing. Tetris was kind of like, this is cool, but I'm a young fella. I don't really want to play this. This is boring. Like, that is the honest truth. Like, and that's a fault on my behalf, because Tetris is an absolute Stone Cold classic. Like, that is straight up it. But when I picked up Puyo Puyo, I got it for, I think it was on sale, I got it for like $30 or something, like a physical copy of it. And I was like, look, this will be nice, especially when I'm going to be traveling soon. Have something like this to play with my girlfriend, you know. Straight up. Fantastic fun. But I never knew what Puyo Puyo was. I never knew what, I was just like, it just sounds great to say.
Yeah, it's fantastic to say.
You know, it just sounds brilliant to say. But I know there's a story mode and all that jazz in it, but
I wouldn't worry too much about the story. Not at all. It's just quite bad.
It's so cringy. It's just hilarious. But the way the game works in, if you're playing it with somebody and how it swaps your, what you're playing out of Tetris or Puyo Puyo, that to me is so much fun. It's a really, really cool game.
Just don't play it online. Like,
why is it bad?
No, it's fine. It's just that Puyo Puyo and Tetris are very popular in Japanese communities, and to say that they're better in the game at the game than most people is an understatement. Like, I played it. I mean, in fairness, it was around launch, so maybe there were less people playing it. But like, I got pulverized, and you can watch replays of other people, and you watch them, and you're like, they need to be put off in their own little league or something, because fucking hell, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine so, man. Excuse me. And the very last thing I played, and I won't stay long on this at all, because I feel like I've been chatting for ages, Hidden Agenda on the PS4.
Yes.
So I went over to a friend's house at Christmas. He had received it from his brother, and he was like, let's play it. So four of us all jumped in. Okay, I'm going to say right out, I adore Until Dawn. I think, like...
Yep.
That is criminally underrated in some ways. I just don't think it gets enough love at all. So I'm all for whatever they're going to do next. This whole Playlink thing, I get it, but it's not great at all for me. Like, if I'm honest, I did That's You, and I thought that was atrocious. Like, that was so cringy. Like, to play that with a party of friends, it's like, oh Jesus, this is very drawing each other's faces. I don't know. It's not for adults, I think, at all. Like, you're not going to take it seriously. And it does, do you know, if you're with all your friends and it tells you enter your name and you can enter in absolutely anything, look, the game is, you're not going to take it seriously. Everyone's putting in
Even my kids put stupid, rude stuff in.
Yeah,
no.
It's what it is, you know. But Hidden Agenda is a more serious version of a party game, and it's bloody long.
Is it?
It's long. Like, I don't know, like, with That's You, it's kind of like a half hour at most. hidden agendas in like chapters. It's like end of part one kind of job. And you're like, what? Like, this is actually after becoming very serious. And you're kind of all looking at each other, kind of going, will we continue or something? And if I'm brutally honest, I did not understand the game. I didn't get what I was supposed to do. And look, we were having a couple of beers when we were playing it. And maybe that kind of caused the situation. Yep. But I didn't understand it. I just thought, like, when you're sitting there with your phones, you're kind of all looking at each other, and you can see each other. Like, you kind of have this really spread out when you're playing this kind of game, and I get what it's doing, but, and it looks great, and the story is a cool idea, but it wasn't for me, if I'm brutally honest. I'm not sold on the play link thing. I just think, like, when Sony tried to achieve these kind of things, I don't know. I think they fall on their arse with it. I just, they need it. Party games, look, Nintendo do it. That's it.
Well, I mean, I like the Jackbox games. We played that on Christmas Day, and that was fun.
Yeah.
But I think they get it right. Chris, you're sort of in the middle on the PlayLink stuff, aren't you? Like, you've reviewed most of them, and like ups and downs.
I think that shoe is pretty atrocious. It just takes forever. Like, the rounds seem to go on, and in between the different, well, I call them questions, they're pretty lame questions. Well, they're just like that voiceover, and
he's just
fucking irritating.
That, like, guy narrating it is like a far more annoying version of Buzz. That is literally what he is.
Oh, he's dreadful.
Like, nobody is that happy. Like, I'm sorry. Just no
one. I
don't want
to play Knowledge. Is it Knowledge is Power, the other one? I didn't think much of that either.
It's all right. It's fine. Hidden Agenda is probably the better of the games.
But, yeah, for sure. That definitely is.
You know, it's trying to do a lot, and it's not just Supermassive trying to cash in on it. They have kind of put quite a bit into it. But
I'm a bit worried about them.
Supermassive.
Yeah, because they made this Until Dawn, which, let's face it, everyone who's ever talked about it loves it, right?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, and yet then they're being, I don't know if they're being told to, but they are making Hidden Agenda, and they've got that VR game coming up, The Inpatient.
And which looks promising. It looks promising.
Yeah, but it's not Until Dawn 2, you know, or it's this thing that isn't going to get wide appeal because it's, you know, like, Hidden Agenda is perhaps intended to be wide appeal because everyone's got a smartphone. Supermassive's Impatient is VR. But, like, they can't be that big a studio that they're working on, you know, main game Hidden Project 2. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. And I do actually feel that if they brought out Until Dawn 2 now, or, like, even in 2 or 3 years' time, I think it could be so popular and so big, because if you look at what Friday the 13th is after doing, in terms of, like, that game runs like bum, okay? It just runs really poor.
I still want to play that.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, right? But the kind of, like, the dumb aspect of the slasher kind of thing from horror movies and all that jazz, like Dead by Daylight and stuff, like, everyone's bringing in the whole Freddy Krueger's in this, like, Ghost Recon Wildlands just brought in Predator. Like, this kind of horror, campy, so, like, slasher genre can really come into place with Until Dawn 2, and I think they could, because they had it in the first one. That game was, like, that game was scary, but, like, it was really funny. Like, in how they handled the scares, you know? It was like, your jump scare, an obvious one, but they just did it well, where you thought it was going to be a scare, and then there actually was, when you didn't expect it. I don't know, man, they should do a second one, and I really hope it happens, because I don't have a VR headset yet, and I want one, and I want to play The Impatient if that's all I'm going to do.
Fair play. Chris, then, what have you been up to over the holidays, mate?
Not loads, but I have kind of sunk a bit of time into a very old game, which I wasn't really expecting to do. I've been playing a bit of Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh, the online Final Fantasy.
Online, yeah. Now, I'm not, like, I've never really played an MMO before. I've never dared to, because I feel if I ever did, it would kind of consume me a little bit. And I'm not going to lie, I've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole.
Oh, mate, I did warn you about this.
Yeah, I know. So I really like it. I love the the way it works. I love the fact that I log in at like 8 in the morning and it's 8 in the morning in the game and there's not a lot of people around. And then I'll just do a few missions and as the day moves on. I'm not playing it for like 12 hours. Good. I just mean like a few more hours later, there's more people joining. And I just like the kind of flow of it. And I think the combat's really easy to kind of play. The missions, there are some fetch quests, but it's just, I just kind of like the way it works. And it's very kind of easy to just dip in and out of. So
does it contain like the Final Fantasy charm, or does it have more of the like an Elder Scrolls Online vibe?
I think it's got a lot of the charm from Final Fantasy. It does feel very much like a Final Fantasy game. But it's its own game in a way, and I don't know where it's going to go for me. I mean, I've had some boss fights which have been quite amazing. They look really good, and they've put a lot into the story. It's not just some naff story they've just piled in for people just to play through the game. There seems to be a lot to it, and there's a hell of a lot to learn, and it's taking me some time, but I'm kind of enjoying it, and it's nice to play a game that I'm just playing.
It sounds like you really enjoy it, Chris, but you're afraid to admit it because you know you're going to spend a lot of time playing it.
Let's be honest. I just don't want to admit I've got a problem, because I feel that that's it for me. If I play this, I'm going to just lose my life, and my kids and my wife will leave me.
Bloody hell!
You know.
Yeah,
I'm only joking. Like
extra dark.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. But no, it's just nice to play something that's just easy to just get on with, and I'm enjoying it. Well, I've obviously with work and stuff, I've not played a lot of games, but that is one of the games that I've kind of sunk quite a bit of time into. Elsewhere, I know you've been playing this as well. Not fucking Until Dawn. Jesus. Life is Strange. Before the storm. I'm just going to go back to bed.
Okay, it's early.
Yeah, no, but Before the Storm, I've played episode 1, so I haven't seen 2 and 3 yet. But I understand what you were saying about how it starts off incredibly...
badly.
Naff. Like,
yeah, naff. Naff is the perfect word for that intro. Yeah, yeah.
It's very lame. And I know with like the original Life is Strange, it was a bit silly, and the whole language and it. But it was kind of, as you played it was kind of just who they were. They're kids. You're playing this, But it really kind of plays on that too much, and it's just awkward. I just felt awkward playing it. And when you're having that conversation with the bouncer, it was like this new system that they've put in, instead of like the time travel, it's the conversation where you kind of win. You've got to try and win the conversation, essentially, and you're just coming across like just a twat, and I just didn't like it. And it does take a while, but I mean, by the end, I was like, yeah, that's actually really good. Yeah. Like the way it ends and the way it kind of sets it up, and there's a lot of kind of, references to the old series, and there are characters there that and it's weird seeing them in it as well. Like, is it Victoria, the horrible girl from the original? Yeah, she's there. And
Nathan Prescott.
Yeah, Nathan Prescott's there, and it's kind of cool seeing them, but also Chloe and seeing her relationship with Rachel Amber. It's just a really kind of nice little take on it, and I'm not sure whether it gets better or not, but I'm hoping
I won't spoil, obviously, because I think episode 3 only just came out, didn't it?
Yeah.
I, generally speaking, rather liked all three episodes in their own ways. There are some glaring, I think, continuity errors. Well, not so much continuity errors, but weird things. Like, this is a very minor spoiler, but like Chloe in normal Life is Strange, in the original, she has a truck, you know, she has a car.
Yeah, yeah, well,
this, I think episode 2 it actually explains where the truck comes from. Right. And you have to kind of fix the truck up as one of the gameplay sections. And because basically it's in the junkyard, and she has to jumpstart it with a screwdriver, right?
Hmm.
So that makes sense, because, if you junked your car, you wouldn't have left the keys in the ignition. You wouldn't just have the keys. But then she sort of does have the keys and doesn't have to use a screwdriver to start it each time. And then, like, obviously, in the main Life is Strange, she's got keys, and it's like, well, it's not a big deal. You know, like, it doesn't matter, really, but it is a silly little detail that you sort of, for some reason, jumped out of me as, like, what are you doing here? Like, you can't...
Yeah.
You can't try and explain the backstory of that without kind of... A lot of Before the Storm, I feel like, tries to explain stuff and never fully commits. That's not to say I didn't fully enjoy it. Like, I really enjoyed it. I like where the story goes. I actually think a little bit is a bit on the nose. Like, there's a huge reveal at the end of episode 2.
Right.
That's supposed to be like, and this is a very sort of UK reference, but kind of the EastEnders drums, you know what I mean?
Okay,
and you're supposed to go, oh my God, I need episode 3 now. The trouble is, I'd kind of telegraphed it like an hour ago. Like, okay. I kind of figured out where... In fact, no, I think I'd figured it out by the end of... Like, I just think it's obvious. It's like, you're supposed to go, and instead you go, well, yeah, like, duh. Like, yeah. Of course. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what other... It's just an obvious thing. And they think... Like, I think they think it's cleverer than it is. And...
I just
really enjoyed Chloe, actually. Like, I really enjoy Chloe. And I think it almost made me wish Life is Strange was about Chloe and not Max. Because by the end of Before the Storm, I felt like Chloe's character had so much more depth and was interesting, and you understood where she's coming from. And whereas, I think we talked about it in the Game of the Year, whereas Night in the Woods, I found it hard to relate to a lot of those characters, because, like, and I get why May's a douche, but she kind of just, yeah, she has a redeemable arc, but for much of the game, she's just a dick. With Chloe, I feel like it's real clear from the very outset why she's fucked up. And they don't, you know, she's, the one thing I would say... I struggle, like, I don't know if, Adam, I don't know if you've played Line of Life is Strange or how you felt about it, but what I'm struggling to work out how old these kids are supposed to be at any point. Like, I don't know how old they're supposed to be in the original.
I think, like, 16.
What?
Yeah, I would say.
Around 16, 17. I think, like...
Well, let's put it this way. Can anyone remember when Life is Strange, the first one, was set? Like, what year? Did they explicitly state?
No. Well, they probably do.
This is 2010. This is explicitly stated that it's in 2010.
Right.
Now,
okay.
Chloe smokes and drives. That doesn't mean she's 17. She still could be 15. You know, it's not. I don't know that they ever say she's got a driving license, but she definitely knows how to drive, and I think her dad taught her. She knows how to fix a car. I think her dad taught her. She smokes. Fuck knows, you know. But then that would mean that Before the Storm must be, I would say, at least a year or two before Life is Strange. And these kids are kind of taking drugs, partying, having sex, smoking and drinking. Like, so I feel like I'm not sure about how old they're supposed to be. And you reckon 15, 16, but that... I don't know.
Yeah, like, I haven't played any of this season at all. I played the first one, and the reason I haven't played the second season is because I fucking hated it.
Okay.
Like, I just... I thought it was a struggle of a game to get through. I didn't like the characters. I don't know. See, the emotion that they were trying to explain and show us, I felt like, I was like, all right, I get it. But, like, for me personally, these characters are just shitheads. Mm. Like, they're just really annoying, angsty teenagers. And I just don't, I don't feel it. I don't relate to it. Like, in the first season, there's that, I don't know which episode it is, but it's the one in the school, okay?
Might be the first one.
The first, it's like, I think it's episode 3 in season 1, where the two of them are in a school at night time.
Oh, the swimming pool.
The swimming pool. And I thought that was fantastic. I thought, like, that was when Life is Strange really became the game I was hoping it was going to be. And then, like, oh man, I don't know, it was painful to navigate the character and stuff, and like the use of Hela and that incredibly awkward jumping on the bed dancing scene. Like, I struggle to kind of relate to it. And I don't know if the way the game looks helps the emotion that they're trying to get across.
Cause so,
it doesn't look that bad, but like,
no, it's not great.
It's not great. And I think, like, this kind of game deserves the whole, like, facial movement down to a T, like, get those watery eyes going.
Before the Storm is way better looking. And in terms of the motion, I think it's dealing with a lot more sadness. And I think because of that, I think that stuff may be a little bit better. I don't want to go into too much detail, but like, I forget, Chris, you might be, because it's fresher for you perhaps. In Before the Storm, episode one, obviously, we all know Chloe's dad died. He died. But that is quite... way more of a focus in Before the Storm. Like, instead of it being a little bit more like, well, her dad died and that fucked her up, like, in this, I feel like they delve a little bit more into, no, it's not just that her dad died, she's traumatised by it. Like, and that is a thread throughout all three episodes of the prequel. Like, she is utterly traumatised, as you would be. Like, you know, of course you would be. But rather than it being a thing that happened to someone else in this, because you're playing as Chloe, it happened to your character, and they definitely delve into the fact she is legitimately fucked up because of this. She is traumatised because of this. And that's kind of the whole of Before the Storm. They go into more sadness, and there are moments that aren't sad, and there are some quite beautiful moments, but generally speaking, it is a sadder game. And
yeah, I feel like I have to say, I feel that Life is Strange, if it's coming out, like, being out right now is probably the best time for it to be out, because there isn't much on. I think a lot of people are just playing catch up. And but, like, what I will say, like, every person I know who plays Life is Strange, if you turn to them and go, what are you playing? Life is Strange. And they're really bummed out, because it's like, they're kind of, no one is ever excited. I'm not trying to be harsh towards the developers and stuff, but nobody has ever truly been excited about Life is Strange or talking about it. And I feel like, do you know, you get the season password or whatever, and next with the episode, you go, all right, cool, yeah, I'll add that to the list to play, or I'll play it now, sure, I have an hour and a half to spare. But no one jumps out going, Jesus Christ, that story moment in Life is Strange, mind-blowing. Like, in a year that, like, deliver things like the story of Aloy, Hellblade, even Wolfenstein. Like, story is coming back. Well, it's always been there, but it was really strong this year, I felt, or last year. And Life is Strange, I don't know. Like, the way you discuss it, one of my friends is playing it too, and like, he speaks the exact same way. He just goes, yeah, it was good. Do you know?
I just feel like, I feel like, and this is the thing, because Before the Storm is a different developer. I guess they're off doing season two proper.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know, actually. I'm sure, because that was the weird thing. I'm sure when they announced Life is Strange, they announced season two, and then they announced a prequel. And I got a bit confused as to, hang on, what have they announced here? Are they doing more, or a prequel, or both? And I was a bit confused by all that. I like that they've made it look better. The lip syncing is way better.
Okay.
They were kind of on a hide into nothing, because once you take that time mechanic out, like, Chloe doesn't have powers. Like, her power, they got that right. Her power is sass and, like, argumentativeness. And I don't know. I would like to see what they do, but they're not going to do any more of this, because it's going to go back. If there's more Life is Strange, it will be Don't Nod again. It will be...
Yeah.
You know,
I think Chris, you were saying there about a moment in a bar, okay?
Yeah, that's the opening of the prequel.
Am I right in saying that was the kind of first bit of gameplay we saw when they announced it? Did they show that off at like E3 or something like that?
Yeah, because it's like the barn. There's a band playing in there, and I think I'm fairly.
Yes,
sure it was.
This was it. Yeah. Like, I remember seeing that, and all I said to myself was just fuck this. I was like, like, I will not have fun doing this. Like,
it's funny you said, because like, Chris, you were saying about the band bit, and like Adam was saying about, you know, when they dance on the bed, the more I think about it, there are moments like that. There's a couple of bit, you know, where you can, you know, you explore and you pick up whatever you want. Like, there are two different snow globes, and the way she shakes them, it's like, have the people made this ever seen anyone move in their lives? Because it's like, it's really strange.
Oh God, I want to see that now. See, if there was tons of moments like that from start to finish, then I'd actually definitely play it, because I just want to see those awkward moments.
I think Before the Storm would be better if it was cut down a bit. Like, this is something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and I won't talk about it too long. But in Life is Strange, like, I got the platinum for that, the Before the Storm, because it's really easy. You just complete the game, and there's like a graffiti moment where she can graffiti, you know, again the sass, she can graffiti something in every other chapter of the game. But so it's a collectible essentially, and it made me start to wonder about collectibles. Like, do some collectibles actually negatively impact the game? Like, what you're essentially doing in a game like Life is Strange to find the collectibles is you're pixel hunting rather than progressing the story. Wasting time pixel hunting. And although I was enjoying, it's like, oh, I got my third platinum. That's two this year. You know what I mean? At the same time, I was thinking, actually, would this be better if I wasn't wasting time doing that and just playing the story? It's a story game.
Absolutely.
You know?
Definitely, because like the collectibles in these games, they just don't work, right? Because when sometimes they don't give you the option to run or walk fast. So you're walking at a snail pace, right? But then you have the depth of field in that area that you're in, right? And you might go, oh, there's a bush down there, and you'll walk to it, and there's nothing there, but you have to walk back, and she's just like, she could be walking towards the screen, and you're just like, this is so fucking boring, and they're just like, I just wasted my time, and I feel that does kill massively, like, the whole point of the story. Like, I don't know, they should never have collectibles in them at all, basically what I'm saying.
Well, I just think, apart from anything, it would have, because I think these, I felt like I played a long time of before. I mean, how long did you feel like episode one took you, Chris?
It took me about 2 hours.
Yeah,
2 hours, 15 minutes.
And that seems long, right?
It felt like it dragged on a bit, mate, to be honest.
And I'll be honest with you, I think episode two is even longer. I mean, you loved Life is Strange. Will you carry on? I mean, you probably might as well, right?
Yeah, because I don't
know. Not a good thing, though. May as well play it.
No, I will do, because I want to see what happens. But it's not blowing me away as such. We'll see what happens.
Feel the end of episode one give you enough of a carrot to make you want to play episode two, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I can't actually remember it, as I'm saying
very,
it, but I remember
it's very
it.
Cinematic, the way it ended.
I actually can't remember. I cannot remember the end of episode one. That's not a good sign.
That's when they stood at the tree. And they find out about...
Oh, of course, yeah. Sorry, how could I... Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I will say the ending of it, like, they do this thing where it's not much of a spoiler to say it ends on a montage, right? And then right after that, it cuts to the most sinister, depressing end you could ever expect from a game, to the point where I was finished, it was like, wow, why did you put that in? We knew that. We knew all about that. Why did you need to remind us about that? You know? Oh, well.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing before we move on.
Yeah.
Right, for continuity.
Yeah.
When was the first episode of Breaking Bad aired?
Wow.
I don't know.
Just because there's a reference to Breaking Bad in it, a very first scene, and I thought...
I would say 2009?
So it might just be before. Fair enough.
Is that too long ago? I don't know.
But if it's 2010, Breaking Bad must have been around then, before then. Because she sprays onto the side of the camper van, doesn't she? Not a meth lab. That's one of the...
Holy shit, you're right. I didn't even pick up on that.
Breaking Bad...
Didn't even pick up on that.
But then I was like, oh, is that all right?
Yeah, does that make sense? Well?
Yeah, whatever. It is what it is.
But that is a point. If that's... Yeah, that'd be interesting. I will say also, the Hela thing is explained in this game.
Jesus, what explaining do they have to do with that word?
Well, basically, the reason she says it is because she's picked it up from someone else. So they never really explain where it comes from the other person, just that she got it from someone else. Yeah, okay. I mean, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I'm pleased I played it. Chris, what else? Anything else?
Nothing over Christmas. I was going to do have a little talk about the beta for UFC 3, just because I haven't got a chance to talk about it yet, and it'll be out in a couple of months. So, yeah, that was basically it. But I'm putting quite a bit of time into it. So if anyone is listening that does like UFC, the third one's a lot more... I would say technical.
Oh Christ! I was going to say more technical.
I would say it's not as. I don't say arcadey because the second wasn't like arcadey, but it's a lot harder. I find it a lot harder, and it does play up to, like, certain fighters obviously are trained in different martial arts and they have different techniques.
Well,
and I think.
Are we allowed to talk about EA? By the way, I should is it okay to talk about EA on a podcast? What have they done wrong recently?
Possibly, yeah. God, okay. Let's move on. Sorry, guys, don't upset anyone.
No, carry on. Yeah. Carry on.
So the different fighters, for instance, like Conor McGregor.
I know him.
Everyone knows who he is.
Never heard of him.
He's got a mean punch. So a lot of that is about striking. Guys like Edson Barbosa, who's got a, you know, he's a martial artist, he's a fine kicker, and the, like the kind of the ground workers, they're all kind of, you have to get in the best positions to kind of get the best out of your fighters. Whereas before, you could, like Nate Diaz is jiu-jitsu, so he's on the ground a lot. He could get away with kind of a standing game. So there's a lot of punching and kicking involved, and he'd be able to kind of take the opponent down. They've kind of put a lot more into these fighters' actual abilities. So it's a lot harder to try and get that win, especially depending on the fighter that you find. And the way they've kind of done the submission is the same, and it's equally frustrating. It's one of the things I don't like about it, is how you get out submissions. It's kind of like kicking out in a WWE game.
Oh, have they brought in this whole, this like a mini game that'll pop up?
It's basically, yeah, and it's kind of, it's returned from the second one, but it feels
fucking hated
more
that.
Annoying. You've got basically
more annoying.
Five stages of a submission move. So if you get someone in like an armbar or something like that, a Kimura lock, a Kimura, it's like a choke hold.
Okay.
You move your right stick around. There's like in each direction, so up, down, left, right, there's like a wide bar. If you move up, then your opponent has to move up to block you from getting out. If
fucking
you then press
hell.
Down, your opponent then sees that, they have to press down to block it. It's just a farce. Like, I just miss games where you just bash the buttons. And
yeah, man, there is something to be said there, because like the UFC games, I've played them all except for two. And like, there's no denying that when you just kick and punch, it feels great. It just, there's a lot of weight behind every hit. And when you get a knockout, it's really funny. And you're like, wow, that was quite satisfying. But the whole sport of MMA is so technical that, does it work really in a game? Like, they've done pretty well. They have. But as you said, in the WWE games, in the UFC games, once they bring up that mini game aspect where you're chasing each other in coloured icons and you must trap each other or some way, like, that is such dog shit, because I want to look at the game and you're like, the move that I'm trying to perform, I'm not looking at. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing how you worked in the models of the fighters doing these moves, because I'm focusing on this mini game. And it's,
yeah, you're right. Exactly right.
It's a really weird thing to have, but I know there's no other kind of way around it, because the sport...
I know a way around it. They could not make UFC 3 and make a new Fight Night game.
Oh, God, don't. Oh, I just want that so much.
When was Fight Night? Was it round 3?
Was it Champion?
Yeah.
When was it, though? It was bloody ages ago.
Yeah, it was.
Do you know what? How can a games company not make a game about boxing? A phenomenally well-loved sport. How can that not be?
Do you know
thing?
What? That's very true. Yet we're getting a fucking ton of games about hunting,
right?
And it's
like
just
UFC. I mean, I accept UFC is. I've never been into. I'm not actually a big boxing fan. It's something my old man liked, and I never really got into it. But UFC is, I guess, similar audience, and it's very, very, very popular, isn't it? But like, I just find it amazing that there isn't. Like, I still want another Punch Out, because I love that series.
Oh, that's...
And that Wii Punch Out was amazing. I want another Punch Out. Like, there's no boxing games being made anywhere, is there?
Not arms. Really, no.
What was that?
Arms.
Come now.
Do you think, Chris, that like it's a step forward for the UFC?
I think when the game comes out, we'll see. Because I think one of the things that does put me off, as you say, it's the mini games, and like there are certain fighters that stay on the ground, like Nurmagomedov, who's like his whole fights are spent pretty much on the floor. When he gets someone on the ground, that's it. And if you were to do that in the game, you're literally watching this little icon with which way to press to get them on to stay on the floor, like to get them in the kind of choke or the mount or whatever. You're constantly watching that, so you're not getting to see the fighters actually perform the moves. And it's like one of the best the best bits of those kind of ground games is watching the other fighters trying to get out, or watching the fighter who's on top kind of restricting them like this snake. And it's, you know, the knockouts are great and all that, but a lot of fights are spent on the ground and
that was a criticism for the second one
of it.
Yeah. There was a criticism of that one.
It doesn't happen. It's like, if to get someone on the ground, you'll go like 2 minutes, and then you'll get someone on the ground, and it lasts for a minute at best. Whereas it doesn't. It's still not happening in this.
Yeah.
And it's also a lot more difficult to kick out or to kind of to get your move to go down. It's quite a frustration.
I can't remember two being that bad. It always did feel that when you tried to kick out or get out of something, like, when you're doing what the game tells you to do in order to get out, but you don't see it, you're kind of going, is this actually working? Is this button combination happening? Yeah. And then you don't think it is, so you just start going crazy and bashing everything. Yeah.
It's frustrating.
It's weird, though, because we're all saying how, it's maybe more technical, it's getting more difficult, whatever, and we're kind of going, oh, Jesus, like, do they need to do that? But to be honest, that is a fighting game. Like, a fighting game is a load of button combinations together. But, I played a lot of fighting games last year, surprisingly, like, because I'm not into it, that genre, but, like, I played Injustice 2 and stuff, and it was fucking brilliant. Like, when you get it down. I think, Adam, are you a big Street Fighter fan?
Yes. With caveats.
Okay. But,
Yes, in the past, I love Street Fighter, I'll say that much.
Yeah. So, like, the whole button combination thing has always been there. But for some reason, when you hear it in UFC, it's just a bit of a disappointment. But then I don't know what I want out of a UFC game.
UFC is literally a fighting game. Like, it is an actual fighting game.
Yeah, and it's very technical. But is it just that, like, maybe when you play it and you're just on the ground, it isn't all that fun, no matter what way they manage to achieve it?
It isn't fun because it's frustrating the way they've gone about it. I just don't feel that it's done in the best way. I think it is a fighting game. There's not a lot of combinations because, I mean, you can put like punches together like you can do in any game. But when you're on the ground, it's very much just a case of moving your left stick in a direction that you're being prompted to do. But that kind of can disappear quickly because your opponent's got a move on you. Like, if you were physically in an octagon and you were trying to get away...
Jesus Christ, I'd be trying to get away.
It's very easy to know how to react.
Me too, slowly.
Yeah, but it'd be very kind of easy to know how to maybe react to your opponent's moves. But when you're watching this little mini game pop up, it's not natural. It's a lot more difficult. So it's just frustrating. But I think maybe it might come with playing it more. I don't know. It's coming out in a couple of months. So we'll all know. But I'm looking forward to it. And I think the first game did the second game did a hell of a lot for the sport. And I think they put a lot of modes in, the whole live mode where you could play through cards, upcoming cards, and you could predict winners and stuff. And you get in-game bonuses if you predicted the winners, and all that was kind of cool. I think the thing that it was lacking in was the career mode. It was exactly the same as Fight Night, where you'd pick a fighter to fight. And then going up to the match, you'd do sort of like three training mini games, and then that was it. Whereas this year, they're trying to kind of cope with the spectacle of it all now. It's very much press conferences. Obviously, Conor's helped that, but there are a hell of a lot of other fighters that are moving the sport forward, and he's not even fighting at the minute. And it feels like they're still focusing on McGregor, where, you know, there's a lot of good fighters. Holloway and Ngannou and Stipe Miocic that deserve the credit. So I hope there's a lot of focus kind of put on these guys.
But have they...
We'll see.
Go on, sorry.
No, I was just saying we'll see what happens.
Did previous UFC games contain microtransactions? Like, a genuinely asking.
Just the idea.
Just the same kind of Ultimate Team stuff, I think.
Okay.
I think you can buy cards. I didn't really dabble because I'm not... I don't really play Ultimate Team.
I bet this has minimal. Well, we'll know if that's, EA that's are paying saying, any that's, attention.
That's why I'm curious about it. I think, like, with the whole Battlefront thing, will EA's next title be very, very limited on those things. Like, have
I'm going to guess no.
Yeah, I don't fucking know.
I don't think they give a shit. No, I mean, sorry, I don't mean that in quite as glib a way as it sounded. I think, of course, they give a shit. The people making the games give a shit. But I don't think they... I think, as something I've talked about many times, the industry bubble that people forget exists. Like, I think outside of you know, hardcore gaming publications and podcasts, I think a lot of people are like, I don't care.
Yeah.
There's still
yeah.
millions of people playing FIFA. You know, like, people are still playing Overwatch, a Blizzard game, and like, spending money on loot boxes. It's definitely a problem, but I think it's a problem with the wider audience isn't even caring about, let alone aware of.
Yeah,
I don't know.
One last thing I will say about UFC, right, is those games are progressing and doing a lot better than what the WWE games are doing. If I'm brutally honest,
like, WWE games need a new developer. Oh, I don't mean to throw Ukes under the bus. They need someone else to take a look at that.
It's actually like, this is the first year where I just went, I'm not going here, because I just looked at gameplay. I saw the audience, and I just went, nope, it's still the skin game. Like, they just have the same rubbish. It doesn't feel great. They add in mini games that just are not good at all. They add in the dialogue stuff. It's terrible. Like, it's really weird, because, like, a wrestling game could be insanely good, because SmackDown 1 and 2 were phenomenal in its time. Like,
oh yeah,
they were so stupidly over the top, but that is wrestling. Like, that is
what
it's about.
Best wrestling game just came out on PS4, Gang Beasts.
Yeah, actually.
There is actually a level in that with a ring in it, and the idea, it's a Royal Rumble, you have to throw your opponent over the ring. And
that's hilarious to watch.
It's too far, you know what I mean? It's you don't want an actual wrestling game that's that, but it's at least fun. You know?
Were you playing that over the holidays?
I did play a bit of that, yeah, yeah. But I must admit, my 12-year-old, nearly 13, I've not seen him. It was like he transformed into a child again instead of this teenager. Like, I and my wife were just... I couldn't see. There were tears in my eyes. I was laughing so hard. It's got limited appeal.
It
doesn't last for long. I'm not sure I can even sit here and go, definitely buy it. But if you want a new game for your rotation when you have some mates around and a couple of beers or whatever, then this is not a bad one at all. It's fun.
No, it's good.
But is it one of those things that, like, I see Gang Beasts, I see the appeal, I see the fun that's being had, but is it just one of those games that, look, play it for 5 minutes, play around, and then you'll be alright? That's kind of,
yep.
Like,
yep,
like,
it's that.
I kind of felt that way when I played things like Octodad, even Goat Simulator. Do you know?
I wouldn't put it in Goat Simulator.
Oh, no, I definitely, but you know that kind of style where, like, I just think if I play Gang Beasts, it's just going to feel impossible to control. But that is the reason of it.
Sort of. It could do with more single player stuff. Yeah, you could do with some kind. It's been in early access for a very, very long time. Now it's finally out, and I can't even remember what it used to play like. It's fun. It's very much a beers party game. Like, you know what I mean? It really is that.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it is. I'd say it's probably 10, 15 quid, and that's all right. I think it would move more if it was a bit cheaper. But
what's the plan for the future with it? Have they said?
I don't know if they have. I mean, there is a VR version of it. I've got that. I've just never... I booted it up and I was like, I don't get this at all. I should have a look at that again one day. Like, it's an Oculus Rift version, but I don't think it's you are first person. I think it's just you're the camera. Which,
okay.
There's definitely scope for some real fun stuff in Gang Beast. It's limited in scope. You know what I mean?
Okay.
What else I've been playing, by the way, just wanted to mention Gorogoa. Has anyone heard of this?
Oh, dude, I started it yesterday.
Yeah. Okay.
I started...
You're getting, like, rave. Like, everyone loves it, right?
Yes, right. Okay. You go on. You go first. You go ahead.
I don't love it. I don't love it at all. I don't think it's bad, and I think it's impressive. I'm not sure. I stopped playing it about 3 days ago, and I'm not sure if I will play it again. It's good. It's pretty.
It's hard to explain what this game actually is, if I'm honest. So,
well, there's basically four panels, right? And you can zoom in and out of these panels and connect them up at some points. And the idea is that you're moving, Yeah, it's hard to explain, isn't it?
You're exploring.
It's
a story that's progressing through.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. What the fuck is the story?
See, okay, right. Yeah, what is the fucking story? But then again, we both haven't finished it, and.
But I've played a good portion of it. Like I don't feel like I'm solving the puzzles because I'm clever. I feel like I'm solving the puzzles because I've tried everything else. And it's like I'll get to the point where I just don't fucking know what this wants of me. So I go away and come back to it the next day, and then I solve it. And a lot of it is about perspective.
Do you find you solve it without feeling like you meant to do that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Like, I didn't check. That's the one thing I haven't checked. I zoomed in. Oh, okay. Now I can. Like, if you zoom in on a light, you can then take the framing away from the light, and that creates another panel. And that panel, then you zoom out of, takes you somewhere else. It's perhaps a bad game to try and describe.
It's a very hard game to describe. If you see images of it, you'll understand straight away. Because let's not lie, the style is really nice. It has that it has that old school storybook style, but. Yeah, so I know that this is on the Switch, I think PC.
Yeah, I think it's like £15 on Switch.
It's £15 on the Switch, and it's £5 on the iOS store. Yep. So I went there because I was like, all right, that's just
better. I'm not going to pay an extra like three times the price because it's on Switch. It's
exactly.
Not my phone in my pocket.
And apparently this game takes only like an hour and a half to finish.
See, I've played more than that.
Yeah. I've probably played more than that too, but that's because I have been clueless as to what I'm supposed to be doing. Because what ends up happening is you just keep moving the four pictures around. You can zoom into each image and kind of swipe it left or right to open up the story. And what you're kind of doing is connecting each picture. Like, you might say...
I've got the perfect way of describing this, okay? So imagine there's two panels, but they're two pictures. Like, on your phone, you've got two pictures, because this is an actual puzzle in the game, right? And each side of the picture, it's on a shelf. So the right-hand picture is a shelf with a box on it. The left-hand picture is another picture with a shelf with a box on it.
Yeah.
By zooming in on the boxes in each different panel, you can change what's in the box. So there'll be a cloud or there'll be a load of screws. And so by putting screws in, it makes that heavier, which tilts the shelf the other way. And it's very clever.
It is clever. And it's funny that you bring up that part, because just before recording, that's where I'm stuck.
I got stuck there for ages.
And what it starts doing, it does this, like, when you actually figure out each puzzle, it is very satisfying. You do feel, because when each picture joins, you kind of go, oh, that looks really nice. And then it progresses and the character moves on and whatever. But each picture, when you see it, it does this weird kind of like pulse effect on a certain item in the picture that's kind of telling you, zoom into this, and I zoom into it, and then I'm just like, yeah, and do you know what I mean? I'm kind of like,
yeah, totally. What?
And then for some crazy unknown reason, I'll be zooming in and out and going around, and then I might go back again like for the 10th time, and all of a sudden the picture is able to come out of itself, and I was like, why did that just happen? No.
Yeah, you missed something. I don't think it has changed. I think you just missed something, because I'm the same.
Yeah.
I don't think that's...
I don't feel like I'm very intelligent figuring it out. I'm just like...
And I don't like a game that makes you feel stupid. Like, no one likes that. I don't think this is... Like, everyone's raving about this.
It's
like,
getting
game of the year
serious
stuff.
Reviews,
like,
yeah.
I'm not feeling it at all. And I would also... Talking about iPhone games, I would add to that I'm not quite feeling Bury Me My Love yet either. Have either of you heard of this one?
Yeah, I heard the premise, and if I'm honest, I'm okay for playing it. It's a bit of a downer for me, I think.
That's what I was expecting, but I've not really experienced. I was expecting it to be more down, you know. So the premise of this is it's an app on your phone, and you load it up, and it's like a simulated text app, you know, like WhatsApp or something. I think it looks more like an Android one from what I've seen, and it's a Syrian refugee. Well, they're not refugees yet, because they haven't got out of Syria, but they're trying to escape Syria in the way that everyone knows happens. Like they find a smuggler, whatever, they get a ticket to a plane, whatever. And the idea is that you're just texting back and forth. And I was expecting, it's basically an adventure game. They send you text messages, you know, and it literally pings up on your phone. There's a notification, like you've got a text from the person. And that's it. That's the premise of the game. And it's got real-time mode, which is what I'm playing it in. So like you will get... You can turn that to like instant, so it's just like plays you know, you constantly, or you can play it real time. So like when I look at my phone after recording, I'll probably have a text from the person.
Yeah.
And you can choose responses, but sometimes you don't, and sometimes you just have to, it's like just literally pressing X in a visual novel. And I'm not, maybe because I'm playing it in real time and it's taken a few days. Look, I'm at the point where the girls paid for a boat to take her across to Europe, I think it was. I can't remember. It's not really sticking with me. Like, it's not. Mm-hmm. I keep saying the girl, the person, because I can't remember the names. Not a lot of it sticking with me. And again, I'm going to keep going to that. So either like next week, I'll be like, oh, you got to play this, one of them, incredible story, or I won't mention it at all, which is how you'll know how I feel. It's interesting. I think there's a game called like A Normal Lost Phone, and that's the same sort of thing. And I think that's the one I should have gone for. Speaking of things I should have gone for, I've raved about Figment all year round. Like, I've played preview builds of it since earlier in the year, and I finally sat down actually on New Year's Eve, and I sat and played through the whole game in 4.5 hours, and I just desperately hope when that game hits Switch, PS4 and Xbox One this year, I desperately hope people don't ignore it, because I feel like it got love last year.
That's good to hear.
I really, it's like, you know Bastion and Transistor, the sort of isometric story-based games?
Yeah.
This feels like one of those. Not with the depth of the RPG mechanics those have got, but in the same way, it's a beautiful game to look at. Isometric viewpoint, puzzle-solving, little bit of light combat, nothing too taxing. Few collectibles if you want it. Heartwarming story. In and out with it under 5 hours, do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like Figment, I genuinely said it, that I feel it would be the indie darling of this year. Last year now. Yeah, last year. And it didn't seem to get covered. Like, we reviewed it, Gary gave it a 9. I mean, that's partially because I was so hot on the game, I was insisted we cover it, and other sites did cover it as well, but not to the scale that you would perhaps expect for a game that really looks like it's going to be an indie darling. You know, it just, I really enjoyed it. I just desperately hope that when it hits consoles, people don't ignore it, because it's just a good time. It's so, I'm a big fan of music, obviously, and I'm a big fan of music in games being used well. And like, the bosses have songs that they sing at you while you're fighting the bosses. Like, and it's just really well done. Like, you know, the, I don't know what it's called, but you know, like, the, when people say, like, it's almost like rhyming, but they, it sounds like the rhyme's going to be a swear, and then they run the sentence off, you know what I mean? So like, smells like something else, blah 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 blah. You know, they keep running the sentence. There's even that in the music, and the music's good. Like, there's a boss with heavy metal music, there's a boss that's like all jaunty and silly, and like, each song is really good. And I was hoping the soundtrack's available, I need to check, but like, it just, Figment is fantastic, and if you have a PC and can run this game, definitely play it. It's just, probably play it again.
There's always moments though where I wish that like these kind of games instantly came out on Switch. Yep. And so I hate the waiting game, like when there's like it's, it's my thing. Like, I still have not played Cuphead because I don't have an Xbox One yet, and I don't know, I'm a bit finicky with PC gaming anyway, do you know? I'm kind of like, I can take it or leave it. It's not my favorite, basically. But since I've seen Figment, I think like visually it looks incredibly charming, and I don't know anything about the gameplay or anything like that, but it just looks, it seems to have, I could be completely wrong in saying this, but it seems to have the view of a very bright coloured Monument Valley.
Yep. There are puzzles that seem similar as well, but you don't have the ability to, it's not puzzle solving like Monument Valley. You don't move the environment in 3D. It's more, I mean, the puzzles aren't new. There's like, you know, moving puzzles, there's all sorts of stuff in there, but like, I just feel like it has such a whimsical nature to it. Like, there's like, the accents they do are purposefully silly. Like, there's a Scottish accent, but it's not a good Scottish accent. But I get the feeling it's supposed to be not a good Scottish accent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be like, there's a, basically, you knock, you can knock on people's doors who are residents in this world you exist in, and like, one of them, the Scottish guy says, like, you know, he says, "Oh, bugger off or whatever, go away." And there's a battery that you need to solve a puzzle, and you take the battery out, and then he just goes, "Oh, there goes me bloody poor," in exactly that kind of voice, and it's really silly. And yeah, I really like, I've been going on about Figment for nearly a year, and I'll stop now, but I
yeah,
really,
you said that about Horizon as well, man. You need to cop on, you know.
I know. Well, I mean, that's plenty of games we've been talking about, but we're going to have a quick look forward to the next couple of months, because there's more happening more happenings than you would assume. In January, for example, we've got Street Fighter V Arcade Edition, which is going to have all the DLC from Season 1 and 1-2, the new interface, two new modes, extra V-Trigger. Free. It's a free update for the people who own the game, and otherwise it's a standalone at reduced price. Is anyone but me excited for this?
I am a little bit, because I got the Street Fighter V after a few months of it coming out.
Okay.
And I quite enjoyed it. But again, there's not enough there, so yeah. I'll play it. I'm shit at it, but I enjoy it.
I'm just hoping this gives the game the life it deserves, because it is a fantastic fighting game.
Yeah.
Released in such a shit state that it never recovered in the broader audience, and hopefully this will give it a chance to give it the life it should have had, you know?
I can't comment really on the game at all because I've never played it and stuff. But for some weird reason, I think it feels like this game has been released about 4 or 5 times or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I promise it hasn't. It's just keep adding content that should have...
Okay,
like they added the story mode later that should have been there. You know, it'd be interesting actually because Dragon Ball Fighters is also out in January. That's another fighting game that looks like it's going to be very much for the hardcore. I like Dragon Ball Z, and I'll be on this. Sticking with going back to Capcom though, the probably the most interesting release of January, and a game I'm hoping that Capcom just send like 4 codes to every website so you can play it in co-op, because it's designed to be played in 4-player co-op. It's Monster Hunter World, which is also having a worldwide release, so they're going for the broadest audience they can possibly go for a change. This is the Monster Hunter designed, I think, to appeal to people who have always had an interest but never delved. And
yeah, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
I've played the beta. It's done enough to make me want to play the final game.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people are like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, well, I think it's next week we'll have stay tuned on the site, because there might be a bit of news on the old multiplayer. But yeah, it looks ace, and it's kind of completely different to what people that have played the series are used to. You know, it's not all cutesy, is it? It just looks fucking sexy. Well, I'm just really looking forward to getting my hands on it. I've always loved the kind of Monster Hunter and the concept of it, where there's a lot of preparation involved. You can't just go in, level up, fight a monster, you know, get it, go to the next part. This looks like it's really kind of, there's a lot of work involved in taking down the monsters, and when you get together in a team, it's going to be ace, you know, when you're on mic and you're all trying to take this monster down. I'm very keen on it.
They seem to I think that Monster Hunter is going to be, it's going to be the game that would take me by surprise the most this year.
Yeah.
Because I've had no experience with the game. I've played one of them, I think, on the DS, and I was like, all right, cool, yeah, I get it. I understand why. But anything I've seen of this one, I've been like, this looks like, this world is going to be really good. Like, the enemy designs and everything seem really cool. It has that whole, like, Final Fantasy kind of 15 world kind of style. I don't know. I just hope it carries a lot of, like, depth and stuff without being too complicated, especially for somebody like me who will be just so, like, I want to play this, but no, it's like, no, if you haven't played the last 4, you're going to be completely lost or something like that, you know? I hope it does. Like,
is what it feels like.
Yeah,
it feels like it is. Like, you don't need any previous knowledge. If you've always wanted to try it, this is the one. I think based on the beta.
Sweet.
It's difficult to know for sure. Also in January, Square Enix are having a couple of games. We've got Lost Sphere, which is Tokyo RPG Factory, apparently the spiritual successor to I Am Setsuna, which was a good throwback RPG. And they've also got Dissidia Final Fantasy NT, which is a Team Ninja developed game. Mm. And there's another fighting game. It's like multiple Final Fantasy characters. There's a video of this on YouTube. We sent the freelancer to go play. I don't know. I don't know. I like Final Fantasy, but I don't know. I'm interested in this. You guys?
I've played the demo of Lost Sphere.
Okay. No, I mean the Dissidia as well. Like,
that one. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not interested in those games, if I'm honest.
No, that's weird, because Once Upon a Time I would have been.
Yeah,
I've never played I Am Setsuna, and
it's a good game.
Dissidia, I'm keen to play it much really? More than I am Dragon Ball FighterZ. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean,
just because I did the chat with Ian and that, I think
it
sounds kind of cool, and I'm looking forward to see what it's like. But I'm not like that excited. I'm just kind of keen. It's not one of my most hyped games of January, that's for sure.
Mm. And the other, I mean, there are more, but the other big release, I suppose, is The Impatient, which is a Supermassive VR game, which is apparently set 60 years before Until Dawn. I mean...
Which is really random.
Yeah, very. Like, gives it like a complete disconnect, doesn't it? I don't know.
It's like, why 60?
You might as well not bother if it's 60 years before. Like,
How old was that like therapist in Until Dawn?
He wasn't 60, like 90 was or no. Well, if he was 60, he'd been a baby, wouldn't he? I mean, you know. Like...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking, is he born in this game? I don't know. There's probably no fucking ties to it. That, but anyway.
I'll play it. You know.
Oh yeah, if I had VR, I'd be well up for this.
I say I'll play it because I have to, because I'm the only one on the team with PSVR. So
yeah.
February then we mentioned UFC 3, which is out in February. February is actually quite big because you got Shadow of the Colossus. The remake of the remake, and Bluepoint are making this, and they made the PS3 remaster. They also made the Uncharted Collection, the Gravity Rush remastered. They did Metal Gear Solid HD Collection, and just for some balance, they also did the 360 version of Titanfall. I would guess we're all fans of Shadow of Colossus.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to say something. Okay. I am going to experience Shadow of Colossus for the first time this year. I didn't get on with the first one. The PS2, the original, yeah. Not that it was a bad game by any stretch. I've never understood this world. But the remake or the remaster, whatever you want to call it, I think looks phenomenal. I found in the original, which they've really cleared up here, it was really hard to see in the game.
Yep.
Where I was supposed to climb on the, are they all just called Colossus?
Yeah, Colossi.
Yeah. That was quite difficult, I found. This seems like visually a lot better and clearer to what you're supposed to actually do. I am interested because I've been told that, like, there is under these three games, like, Ico, Shadow, and, Last Guardian, like, there is a good story, apparently.
Yeah.
And I've heard that Shadow is very, very... It's pretty unreal, like, the story that comes out.
It's the best of those three games. In every respect, it's the best of those three games.
Yeah, but it's supposed to...
I think.
From what I've heard, it makes Last Guardian go up if you've played the other two. Because I did not gel with Last Guardian.
I wouldn't agree with that at all.
Okay, cool. That's grand.
I don't think The Last Guardian is very good, and I don't think it makes any difference how good the other... Ico and Colossus are better. Way better.
No, but... that's fine, because I didn't... If I'm brutally honest, I'm glad to hear that, because if that was the case, I did not want to go back and play Last Guardian again.
No.
And see
not.
The story.
Never, ever again, thank you. Never, ever again.
Oh, that was some poor game.
Yep. I wanted to kill... Trico. Well, that's harsh, but the game made it. Anyway, Owlboy is out in February as well, which is a PC game that's finally coming to PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. And again, wanted to mention that because it's another amazing game, like Figment, that's coming to console that I hope... I mean, Chris, you reviewed it, didn't you, Owlboy?
Absolutely incredible game, yeah. I loved it. I think it had about a 9.
It's just
beautiful. It's just like...
Yeah, it looks amazing.
It's a Metroidvania. I hate saying that word, but it is.
Yeah.
Because there's no other word for it. And it's really kind of a really nice story, and it kind of does things that games don't really do with the protagonist. And if you've not played it, you'll know what I mean when you see him. Is he blind or...
Oh, I can't remember that.
I can't remember, but he's like got something that kind of... causes him to struggle in life, and he gets kind of in the very like opening minutes he kind of gets picked on, and
it's weird
to see that in a game, and it's his friends that kind of pull him through, and he gets taken on this adventure, and it's just a gorgeous world, a lovely story, and it's perfect for the Switch, Adam. For the Switch.
Tremendous.
It will be amazing to just take that with you and experience that like on the go. It's a really lovely game. And I'd be nice to play again, to be fair.
Well, we've also got Secret of Mana, which might be nice to play again. I don't think there's much to say on that. It'd just be interesting to see how it's accepted.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
People tend to not love that when a game.
Yeah.
You know, but that's 1993, the original game, beloved. You know, speaking of beloved games, Bayonetta 1 and 2 out on Switch in February.
Perfect.
So again, Bayonetta 2 gets another chance.
Can I make a confession?
Well,
I've never played a Bayonetta.
Okay, well, you can rectify that.
I feel like I should have, because I know how much people.
No, I don't think that's as bad as me saying Shadow, if I'm honest. I think you're okay. I think Bayonetta. Bayonetta 1 and 2 are excellent. 2 especially, I find, is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm just really happy that it's, because it came out when the Wii U was truly dying. I feel like that was the last really great Wii U game. And I remember when it was going out, I was like, I really hope Bayonetta 2 gets to come out down the line again, because not enough people have had the chance to play it. And I'm just really happy. And the fact they've bundled 1 and 2 together, I'm like 1 is really good. It's a bit difficult. It just has that whole, do you know, Devil May Cry hard kind of feeling. And then 2 is a bit easier, but visually 2, and just the sheer and utter madness that happens is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, the least interesting fact I could ever give anywhere ever, but Bayonetta 2 was the first review on the new look God is a Geek as you currently know it. Lee Garbutt reviewed it, gave it 10 out of 10. It was the very first review on the new site. So, let's say, least interesting fact ever. The final game out in February that we should talk about is Metal Gear Survive, one I'm quite excited to see because...
Yeah. Really?
To see how they, genuinely, because I love co-op, and this is a co-op Metal Gear game, which to me, okay, you've got my attention.
Yeah.
The only thing that worries me is that it can be played solo with AI teammates. But apparently, the Fulton system is present, and you can Fulton zombies, which is... weird. I don't know. We'll have more on that before release. I suppose that's all we should say about that, isn't it? Really.
Yeah.
I've no idea if this is going to be in it or not, but I would love to know that Solid Snake would be in it and that kind of era. Like, I'd love to know that they go across every kind of generation of Metal Gear. That's the one thing I'm kind of most excited to see is imagine like Solid Snake in on the Fox Engine, like at its kind of current state. So I'm really excited to see what they do with it, because it's essentially a multiverse, isn't it? They're going
something like that.
There's no particular story set in the world. It's just a bit of everything. So I'm excited to see how what they do with it. Even like having Grey Fox in it as well. There's a lot of kind of potential for this, and I think with the Fox Engine, it's different to say Umbrella Corp that Resi did, which was just shit. I think there's a lot of hope with Konami managing to pull some out of the bag.
Mm.
So yeah.
I mean, they're using the same engine, I'd imagine. It's like it's the same game, not remastered, repurposed, isn't it? I would hope.
I don't know. I think this is. I'm excited. Look, I love Metal Gear, but I just feel that this is gonna. I don't know why I've no facts to base this on, but I just think this is gonna run really poorly. I'd
be very surprised if that happened.
I know. It's either that or it's just gonna lack fun.
Okay.
It just, I've no reasons, but I just don't know why this is what we need, like, in the franchise. I just don't understand, especially after,
maybe it's them dipping their toes back into it to see how people take it. Because if they were releasing Metal Gear Solid 6, you know what I mean? Like, maybe this is them saying, well, let's just see what happens here. This is the safest bet, perhaps, for them.
Like, is the gameplay going to be, it can't be the way it is, because... The premise seems to warrant the gameplay from, what is it, Metal Gear Revengeance? Is that the name of it?
I don't know. I mean, the game I'm guessing this will be is like a Ghost Recon Wildlands, but set in Metal Gear with Metal Gear 5's controls and system. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't know.
We'll see.
But there you go. That's the podcast for this week. All that remains really is to say you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at GBSF. Adam is... No, that's not going to work, is it? Adam Carroll is at Adam Zoaks. That's Adam Zoax. Chris is at First Avenger 83, and of course at God is a Geek. Also worth mentioning, if you want to send us some stuff to chat about or you want to ask us questions, you can do so via Twitter at God is a Geek, facebook.com/GodIsAGeek, or you can just email podcast@GodIsAGeek.com. That's podcast@GodIsAGeek.com. They'll come through and we can talk about those points or read out your comments, whatever you want to say. Also, very, very last thing to say is that if you like this podcast, if you like God is a Geek, if you want to support us, all of us, for $1 a month on patreon.com/God is a Geek, you will get this podcast, this exact one you're listening to. You would have got it an early, at least 24 hours, sometimes 48 hours if we can. And also, it'll be longer. Like, if you're not listening via Patreon, there's a whole bit you've just missed. And in case you're concerned, what you can actually just, once you've become a supporter on Patreon, you can get a URL that you can add to your podcast app on iTunes, on iPhone, on Google phones, whatever the fucking hell thing you want to do. But you can add that in and you can get the podcast just the same way you would as this, but it's like the premium version. So that's something that's happened recently. The Patreon have added an RSS feed, essentially. That's about it. Adam, Chris, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And guys, we'll see you next Wednesday or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.